Peace and welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me, folks. Tonight, we have been having a conversation about how Baltimore City schools have missed, students have missed millions, 1.5 million, 1.5 million, excuse me, hours of class time because of inadequate school facilities. And we've been talking about the impact of this. Where do we go in dealing with this issue? Because we know that HVAC issues, AC issues, we know that the school buildings have been deteriorating over the years. And so there was a study done by Johns Hopkins University where they have quantified, they were able to quantify this problem based on per student. So let's go back to the line, and folks, we encourage you to be a part of this conversation at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Mark. Mark, thank you so much for checking in and certainly for your patience tonight. What do you make of this, Mark, and where do we go from here now that we know the number of these of the impact that has, that these inadequate facilities have made on the students' educational experience? We got Mark on the line. Let me see. Mark? Nope. Man, Mark, we just had you, sir. All right, Mark, make sure you hit us up, 410-319-8888. Let's go back to hearing what you have to say. I got Neil, one of my wonderful, loyal Facebook watchers, to check in. Neil said, quote, "It is really unfortunate that the Baltimore City schools have fallen so low. They have been mismanaged for a long time, and they won't catch up unless someone starts. Sometimes when you look at the totality of a problem, like Mount Everest, it appears insurmountable. However, you can't climb Everest unless you stop at the camps along the route to the top to rest, reassess, and celebrate the victories already achieved. The administration needs to achieve smaller targets and keep going. Otherwise, it will always be an insurmountable problem." I like that idea, Neil. I think that there is some real truth and value to that. I'm wondering, has this situation has been, since it's been neglected for so long, if it's out of control, like we're past small incremental steps to address it? Or are we at that point now we need dramatic sweeping change, dramatic sweeping reform? That's what I'm wondering. I hear you. We do need to stop, rest, assess, celebrate those victories. But children, our students, are missing a lot of time out of the classroom that they don't have to miss. So are we beyond that point of kind of having what we used to call, what we would call in community organizing, winnable victories, you know what I mean? Low-hanging fruit. Are we beyond that? I think you bring up a good point, though, Neil. The school system, and I think the city. But here's the other part about this. Here's the other part. In 410-319-8888, the expectations that we have of the school system, are those expectations consistent with the reality? Because yes, the school system can be making some changes, like I just mentioned in the first hour. The school system has built 14 new schools over the past 5 years. 14 new schools. But if you hear the talk from us, the school system has not done anything. The school system is falling apart. The school system is not making any progress. So do our expectations need to be kind of tempered a little bit to look for the small, low-hanging fruit, winnable victories? Big questions, right? Big questions. Let's go back to the phone line, see what you got to say. We got Sharon from Catonsville. Sharon, what's your take of this, ma'am?
Well, I think we have to look at this situation holistically, and that is to say, I think the school system, of course, can recover, but the school system is constantly underfunded. 80% of your funding comes out of the state of Maryland. So then you have to look at and ask, why is it that Baltimore City Public Schools are underfunded? And you look at this, it's historic, and it's not Democrat or Republican, but it is a racist act that people, this state is the richest state in the nation, but yet we don't have money to fund the public school system in Baltimore City. So it's not the school system in and of itself sitting in isolation of everything else. So when you have the oldest infrastructure in the state of Maryland in our schools in Baltimore City, that means it will take more to replace those schools and bring those schools up to par.
Yeah, yeah. And so now we're getting back to the conversation of equity, Sharon.
Absolutely. Equity very well may mean more. It doesn't mean equal. It doesn't mean the same.
Right. So, especially if so, if somebody's starting from the way back, you know, 5 to 10 paces behind the standard, not even like the leader, not somebody that's innovative. I mean, just simply the standard. Equity is to help bring, you know, fill in the gap.
Oh, absolutely.
Gotcha.
Equity will, in fact, may mean more because you have to do more because people are so far behind. And it has been intentional. And that's the other part of it. When Baltimore City Public School System became a predominantly black school system and maintained itself as a predominantly black school system is when Baltimore City funds were shifted away. Baltimore City school system was a flagship school district in the early 60s when it was still predominantly white. And many people forget that.
Mm.
And it was the changing, that white flight, where people fled out to the counties and the system itself. And don't forget, there was a practice in Baltimore City where your other counties actually sent Baltimore City its poorest people, but those counties would then fund those poor people that they sent from Montgomery County, Howard, Prince George's, wherever. They sent them to Baltimore City. And then in the 80s, many of those delegates and state senators, particularly in Montgomery County, began to run on the idea that we're no longer going to fund Baltimore City. We're not going to continue to give all this money to Baltimore City. So Baltimore City ends up with some of Maryland's poorest people, but
yeah,
not having the money or resources to really support and deal with those poor people. So it is a long-standing historic problem that we need to look deep and long at. And it's just not the people managing the money. They're simply robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Right,
and
right.
And people are putting Band-Aids on, you know, an artery that's bleeding. We have to look at it deeply to understand the problem, and ultimately it does rest with adequately funding the Baltimore City public school system. So when you talk about buildings, you're talking about capital dollars.
Right.
Capital dollars are separate from the funds that you give for the books and materials.
Right.
Now, my concern is when you're talking about the students missing so much time out of classrooms for whatever reasons and infrastructure problems, so on and so forth, I'm not sure that's a fair assessment. In the state of Maryland, students are required by law to have 180 days of instruction. That's every student in the state of Maryland
right.
in public schools. So with that being said, I'm not sure what we're saying when we're saying that students are missing hours out of a classroom.
So if we have 180 days, we could probably cover a lot more. I mean, and I think there is a correlation between the amount of time that the students are in and the amount how much of the curriculum is covered within that course of time. That, you know, that if you are a teacher, you have a certain given period of time for each lesson plan, right, for each lesson. But if you're missing those days out, now you got to be very creative on how to either make up on, you know, bring the students up to speed, or in some cases, you might have to just skip that lesson. So something is still going to get lost in this situation. You know, is it whether it's time, whether it's the curriculum, whether it's a student, you know, feeling something in a healthy environment, something is going to get lost. Sharon, thank you so much for checking in. I appreciate you. Let's go back to the phone line. Let me hear from one of our new callers, David. And then we got Madison, another new caller from Baltimore. David, what's your take?
How you doing, brother, man?
I'm good.
So I got two things just I wanted to drop in real quick, and I'm going to hit the road.
Okay.
One is I heard this urban legend that the lottery and the casinos are supposed to be giving money to the schools.
Yeah.
I don't know where that started. And I don't know if that's happening.
That was the original conversation when the lottery started years ago.
Exactly. So, but one thing I would like to say, take my time and say while I have this time with you is, for all the callers that are, you know, calling and got something to say, just question them. What are you doing with the resources you have? I don't have a lot. What I do have a lot of is time. And what I can tell you I do is, personally, and I encourage other men to do the same, I volunteer in Baltimore City schools, I volunteer in the community, and I run programs at the rec centers. So it don't take nothing big. It only takes one person to make a difference.
Yeah.
If the right person steps up and starts emulating what other people in the city are emulating,
yeah,
you know, change will come. And attention, you can't, you know, you get so much attention, you can't ignore it.
That's true.
But I would encourage your callers, you got something to say about it, don't even waste your time calling. Call and celebrate the show. Voice your opinion, but do something with what you got.
There it is. That's a good point. Thank you, David, for checking in. Let's go to Madison, new caller from Baltimore City. Madison, what's your take of this?
Hi, Faraji.
Hey, Madison.
So I'm a graduate of Western High School. I graduated in 2015, so I'm pretty young, and I still have a fresh take about the current situation at Baltimore City schools.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about the low-hanging fruit and, like, getting the wins, like, where we can.
Mm-hmm.
There are easy things that could be done. Get the kids some books. Like, I was at one of the, quote, best schools in the city, but we didn't have books in some of our classes. We didn't have, like, the best opportunities in some of the AP classes. We only had a few here and there that we could possibly take.
Mm.
So when I graduated and went to college, I was still behind when I got into college. Like, I had to catch up when I was, like, in my classes at university. So, like, getting the kids is, like, books and, like, toilet paper. We didn't have toilet paper in some of the bathrooms a lot of the times. We had to carry our own toilet paper in some of the bathrooms. So, like, the easy stuff that you're mentioning are doable. But, like, no one is doing the work to, like, monitor the schools. Like, so the council, city council members need to be voted into a system that, like, people need to check them on that. Because there are easy things that could be done that are not being done.
Right, right. And really quickly, Madison, you know, when you were in school, you said in 2015, so this study actually covers from 2015, well, probably 2014 to 2019. But did you see the facilities kind of restrict on how much did it become a real issue for you and your classmates and for those coming behind you?
Yeah, like, there were times when we were in school and it was so cold, people, like, wore blankets and, like, coats in classes because it was just the heating system was not working.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, it was an issue. Like, if you're coming to school every day and, like, you can't focus because it's 20 degrees in the classroom, like, that's not helpful to a good learning environment.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was definitely a challenge. And this was, like, one of the best schools in the county or the city, quote. So, like, I can't imagine how, like, Douglas or, like, some other schools are, not to, like, throw shade at those schools, but I can't imagine, like, any of the other schools that are just, like, the regular schools, how they are compared to, like, the best school in the city.
Yeah, with less resources.
Yeah.
That says a mouthful. Madison, please don't let this be the last time we hear from you. I definitely appreciate your insight on this issue. Folks, we're going to take a pause from this conversation because we, as I mentioned before, as all for the rest of the evening, we're going to be doing our due diligence to bring you election coverage about the Maryland 7th Congressional District. Because folks are coming out to the polls. We only have about an hour and 40 minutes left before the polls are closed at the 8 o'clock hour. So if you haven't had an opportunity to vote, now is your time to take advantage of that. Let's check in with our newsman himself, Mr. Julius White, who's been out and about at different polling sites throughout the city. Julius, thank you so much for checking in, sir. What's the latest that you got?
All right, so the latest that I have from the Board of Directors, City Board of Elections Director, Mr. Armstead Jones, just got off the phone with him. He says there's 29,604 voters. That was just as of about 6:15. Now, I did mention to him there is some information that's been floated on Twitter that's about double the amount that we are reporting. He tells me that there is some misinformation, and his folks at the City Board of Elections will respond as to what the actual count is. But again, what he reports to me is 29,604 voters. I'm at Douglas High School right now, and so they have had from 7 o'clock until about 6:04, there's been about 15 people to come in. But when I got here and checked in, there were 226 people that had voted at this precinct alone. So this is a better turnout at this precinct, at this location at Douglas High School.
Now, Julius, you said at the last check-in that Mr. Armstead Jones, the director of the Baltimore City Board of Elections, he said that he was expecting a low voter turnout. Did he actually give you a number?
All the way back to the back. I'm sorry, say again.
Did Mr. Armstead Jones, did he give a number on his expectations? He said he expected a low voter turnout.
He did not give a, pardon me, a number for the expectation. He expected a low turnout. I asked him about the number he gave me about the turnout so far, what percentage of the registered voters in District 7. He told me he hadn't done any calculations as of yet, but he did expect a low turnout, but he would not give me a number that he had in mind.
Well, you know what? It does sound like there was a bump. We talked to you at an hour ago. We were at 27,034. Now we're at 29,604. So it looks like there has been a little bit more participation. What's been, as far as you know, Julius, the overall sentiment and spirit? Are people excited about this election, given that there are so many candidates on the ballot?
Problem. There are some people who told me they these are people that I've talked to. They are constant voters, if you say, or regular voters. And they have told me in so many ways that they believe there are too many people on the ballot. They've expressed sentiments about past candidates, current candidates, and some people who they say are just in the way. that's been the most I've heard today, is that they believe there were too many people on ballot. I've spoken with the chief judge here at this location, and I asked him about the turnout on special election days. He says, well, I never knew there was such a thing as today, meaning in other states, when there's a seat left vacant, the governor would then appoint someone to fill the remaining term of whoever that incumbent was that
right.
passed away or stepped down or whatever. But not in this case. Governor Hogan set the special elections up in Texas. So you have today's the special primary election.
Right.
Then April 28th, voters go back. Whoever wins today between the Democrats and Republicans, they will have their day April 28th. Whoever wins that, they will fill out the remainder of the term. And then in November, there's the general election, which is, of course, presidential election, and there will be those persons running for the actual two-year term. So this is a special election to fill out the 8 to 9 months that's left on Congressman Cummings' term. And then in November, there'll be more candidates vying for the full two-year term, Democrats
Fantastic.
And Republicans.
Fantastic. Julius White checking in and giving us the updates on what's happening at the polls, folks, as the election for late Congressman Cummings' seat is underway at this point. Julius, we'll be checking back with you very shortly. Thank you so much for that update. Let's go back to the lines, folks. And folks, if you want to join us in this discussion about the schools, but more importantly, if you want to just, you know, you can say that you voted. You don't have to tell us who you voted for, but you can certainly just express the sentiments that you have if you've gone to the polls. It's absolutely mind-blowing that a lot of people did not know, that people did not know that this was happening. I've seen signs all over the city. I think I've seen signs for candidates in certain parts of the city. I'm like, this part is in the district? No, it's not. Signs all over the place. And I'm just like, oh, okay. But we really do, and this is with all due seriousness, folks. I know that people tend to believe, like, you know, politics is nothing, blah, blah, boom, you know. But we really do need to make sure that we are at least knowledgeable about when certain things come up. You know what I mean? And this is not heavy-duty stuff, folks. This is just being a citizen. This is just being a resident. Like, you know, in an election where you're going to have the opportunity to elect your next congressperson, that is a big election because that person will represent you and represent us and the federal level. So we really can't, you know, it's, and I get it that life can sometimes consume us, but as residents, as citizens of the city, of the state, we need to make sure that our civic participation is a lot higher than what it has been. And I know you got 32 candidates on the ballot. It's very hard to determine who has the best platform. I can totally understand that, folks. We don't need to add more to our brains to try to comprehend and understand. But at least do our due diligence in researching the ones that really strikes your fancy, the ones that you may have heard about. And really just do the work to do our research and say, all right, let me check this out. Then just check this out. If 2020, if we are in a place where we do not know that things are happening around us, right, unless we see it on social media or unless we hear it on the radio or on television, but if we're not cognizant of seeing it and happening in our own neighborhoods, our own communities, if we're not talking about this, this is a political year. Big things are going to be shifting in the city, around the state, and across this country this year. We have to do our due diligence and be responsive as citizens. As citizens. Look, I got to take my next break. When we come back, Dwayne, Stephen want to check in about the school issue. Also, in the next 30, I got to talk about the latest news around Gervonta Tank Davis. So let's keep on having the conversation on an extended version of For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM.
I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
So welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Folks, let's get some final thoughts on this conversation about Baltimore City's public school students missing 1.5 million hours exactly, about 221,000 days over a five-year period, according to a new report that has been released by Johns Hopkins University. This is putting the school system back in the front light, into the spotlight, because the students weren't missing it because the teachers weren't there. The students weren't missing it because they forgot the school was happening. The students were missing days because the buildings were inadequate. AC issues, HVAC issues, window issues. Like the buildings itself, the infrastructure of the schools have been deteriorating and is not in the best condition to house students for education. Let's go back to the phone line, see what you got to say. Dwayne, thank you for your patience. Then we're going to hear from Stephen. Dwayne, what's your take on it, sir?
Hey, I got a question. Is this the first time that they've done this study of the hours?
Probably.
Okay. Well, look, for the most part, this study is useless. I mean, it doesn't really tell us much that we didn't know. We knew the kids were missing time out of school from weather-related situations because of the AC. We knew that, okay? At the end of the day, you know, unless they correlated this this study and said, okay, and this is how it affected reading. This is how it affected math. You know, this is how it affected graduation rates. I mean, this is how it affected the number of students that are getting into, accepted into four-year universities. It's mostly useless.
Well, it can't be thrown out because the study did reveal that it reveals the glaring disparity, Dwayne, of funding between of the school system, funding from the state, funding from the city, and funding from the federal government. That at the end of the day, we're just not giving enough money to the school system for there to be some any real renovations done. Like when we look at, and I'm going to go back to a little statistic that we shared in the first hour, only 17% of Baltimore City schools are considered to be in good or excellent condition, compared to 90% in Howard County and over 60% in Baltimore County. When you have that level of disparity, then you can kind of see for yourself through this study that, you know what, this is really a dangerous place for the school system to be in if we don't address it quickly and soon.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and what you're saying has some relevance. At the end of the day, the only thing that matters are what are the results. You see what I'm saying? And I would argue that, you know, it's probably, you know, we probably don't even know what the real results are that the current school system in its current state is even producing. You see what I'm saying? And if we don't know that at a high level, then we certainly can't improve on what we don't already know. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, because everything that we do and everything that we fight for has to be in relation to how do we increase the numbers of people graduating, the numbers of people being able to read, the numbers of people that can put, you know, four sticks together, you know what I'm saying, and do some math, and the number of kids getting into college. If we're not, you know, channeling all of our energy through those metrics and how we increase those metrics, then, you know, we really are wasting our time.
Well, I mean, but if you are in a cold school building, I mean, nobody wants to go to a cold school building, a hot school building. Nobody wants to be able to be in a school building where you can't turn on a water faucet, you can't open up a window, you know, or you looking at it, you might have mice in the cafeteria. I mean, that, you know, that plays on you after a while, because you have to ask yourself, you know, the question as a student, do they really care? You know what I mean? Is this something that, why am I learning in such conditions? And then you might go to your homeboy, your homegirl school in a different county, and they like, man, we don't deal with none of that. Now you really feel like a stepchild.
Well, I'm not commenting on, you know, the students. I'm commenting on, you know, the our thought process as the people and the leadership's thought process, you know, in reference to this study, because what we have to be trying to do is increase education. You know what I'm saying? And yes, we want to do that in a comfortable space and all that. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, if we're not starting from the ground and say, okay, who in this room can actually read? Okay, so all the people that can read get on this side, and then all the people can't read get on the other side. And I'm being, you know, elementary in my, you know,
right,
in
I
my,
hear you.
And,
right.
and sarcastic, but we have to run through those metrics. We have to know.
So the thing about infrastructure and really, if I'm hearing you correctly, is like, all right, we can get past that. We still need to keep our focus on the curriculum, on the graduation rates. We shouldn't be kind of bogged down by this whole conversation around infrastructure. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. We're bogged down, and we're hacking away at the leaves, but we're not handling the root of the problems. That we're highlighting the leaves, oh, look at the air conditioning, oh, look at the old schools, and all that. And I'm not saying those things aren't important, but I'm saying the most important thing that we should run all of our hacking with the leaves should be at the root of the problem.
Gotcha.
Because it's the root that is going to get, you know, kids and get education, make education happen.
All right. Dwayne, thank you so much for checking in. Always good to talk to you. Let's go to Steven, and then we hear from Drake. Steven, what's your take on this?
Thanks for taking my call. I met you on Martin Luther King Day.
Yes.
So your last caller, Dwayne, he pretty much hit it on the nail, but I have something to add on to that. So I say that the real problem is the third-party companies that these schools are going to that are expensive, and they're not doing the job they need to do done because it's not their problem. As long as they have your money, they don't care. But there's a lot of smaller companies out here who charge cheaper than these big companies that their schools are going to, who do better quality jobs. And, like, for example, with the, like, a couple years ago, we had this problem where they said that Baltimore County had more technological learning resources than Baltimore City. But, like, we went and got all these tech things, but then stuff started going wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to these big companies that we had to pay a lot of money for. And then we come back, still same stuff going wrong with them. So we keep sending it in. And I knowing that what I know as being a student of Baltimore City Schools currently and being in the programming and computer technology business myself, I know that this is, there could be a lot better stuff going on with these computers if they went to the smaller companies and just got the people to do a good job, because like this, and also with the staff, if we're going to talk about the building, let's go to the staff, like, because you can't teach kids, and you can teach kids in any environment. Kids are ready to learn every day. You just got to make it interesting. But the staff out here, they don't really care about making it interesting. They just want to give it out to you in a plain, simple, black and white format. But you, let's say you got to add a little color, like play games, like add a little fun into it and just, like, make it challenging. Because there's students out here my age in sixth grade, just like me, who still don't understand the basics that you learn in, like, pre-K and kindergarten about math and reading.
Right. Hey, Steven.
Because the teachers never taught them this stuff.
First thing, Steven. No, let's do that one more time for Steven. See, this is what happens when you experience your children. Don't think your children are not listening to when grown folks talking. Steven, how old are you, sir?
11.
You gave, as an 11-year-old, you gave a grown man solution to look to some of the smaller companies. Maybe they can help out in this process. That's what I'm going to do for you, Steven. That's what I'm going to do for you. I think that your idea, and I think that more importantly, your thought pattern is exactly what we need to preserve and why we need to have certain conversations. And so, brother, I thank you for taking time out. And I know your family is proud of you. But you're right. You are absolutely right. This is about critical thinking and bringing everybody to the table. So, Stephen, thank you so much for shedding light as an 11-year-old coming into this conversation like a very mature, well thought out answer. Thank you so much, brother. It's absolutely powerful.
You're very welcome, Faraji.
All right. My man, Stephen, checking in. 11 years old. That's what we do, man. That's what, I mean, seriously, folks, that's what it is. That's what it is. This is exactly why we have these conversations. Because if we can't engage the next generation into this discussion, and then more importantly, we might think that they're not impacted and they don't see all of this madness and this cake of confusion. I ain't forget about the cake. Then guess what? They're able to see through the things, all of the smoke and mirrors and all of the madness, to get us some clarity on an issue that has been longstanding but has been short answered. Let's go back to the line. Let me hear from Drake out of West Baltimore. Drake, talk to me. What's your take on this?
Good evening, Faraji.
Good evening.
I have certainly enjoyed the show this evening.
Thank you.
Comments from all of the folks, the young folks that called in. And I think that may be one of the answers as far as getting their input. I think that representatives of the youth meet from different schools. I don't know how they would want to handle it, but they need to be on the board, the school board, so they can let the school board members know what's going on with the students and what the students are not feeling with their learning environment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I I really think that would be a positive. I also believe that you have to clean house from the top on down, because there should be people in charge of the superintendent of schools, okay? Then he has his people under him. They're supposed to be in charge of the reading programs in the schools, math programs in the schools, the spelling curriculum in the school. And if they're not doing their job, because I'm a product of Howard County. I worked in this school system for 18 years. And believe me, Howard County has its flaws as
well. Yeah, we know.
Okay, but Baltimore City not having the materials, that's just unthinkable, in my opinion. That's just carelessness on the part of whoever handles the supplies for the school system, because their curriculums are supposed to meet certain standards.
Right.
So you're telling me that they're not doing their job, and if they're not going to do their job, then you need to get someone in there that is going to do their job the way it is supposed to be done. And my last comment, PTA, parents, okay? It's so disheartening that parents don't realize how much power they have with the school system. The parents have to take a stand now.
You know what?
That's a whole nother conversation.
Hey, Drake, you know it. You know it's a whole nother conversation, sister. You know it's a whole nother conversation. First and foremost, thank you so much for checking in. That's a whole nother conversation. I think that for me, the big thing that is always kind of like in my spirit to do is to get us to be so inspired that we get from a state of apathy into a state of activity. From apathy to activity, folks. That's it. That's where we need to be. And we cannot. I'm gonna say this, folks. In the great city of Baltimore, we all of us who are able-bodied men and women and children, we all have a responsibility. We all have a responsibility to make our city better. People talking about city in crisis and all that. We all have the responsibility. We can't be on the sideline. You can't live, work, play, raise your family in the city and not want to learn something and say, you know what? What can I do to make my city better? I mean, really, that's what it is. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves at the children's table when big decisions are being made, getting the short end of the stick. We're going to find ourselves, and in some cases, being on the menu, as they say, right? We're not going to be a part of the great change. Evolution is going to happen in the city of Baltimore. Please don't believe that if you ain't involved, somebody, that's going to stop the show. That's not going to stop the show at all. You know, they wouldn't do. Yes, they would. Yes, they would. Trust and believe. Yes, they would. Baltimore is too important of a city. It may not be important to you, but it's important to somebody else. That they will make the proper changes, they will make the necessary investments, they will do what they need to do. Yes, they would. And I'm not talking about, let's get this out of the racial context, I'm not talking about white versus black. I'm talking about interest. I'm talking about interest here. I'm not talking about white people and black people. I'm talking about people have an interest in this city. And those who have power, and let me break down that power piece. They have money. They are organized. They have resources. Right? Therefore, they wield some sense of power. And if we don't have those things at the forefront, we can't be the driver of change. We can't be the driver of taking this city into a space where our interests are truly being met and addressed. All right, let's go back to the phone line, see what you got to say. Clark from Baltimore. Clark, what's your take? Thank you for checking in.
Hey, Faraji. It's always good to hear you.
You too, brother.
On this school tent, I would think that it's time that we really did organize ourselves. I guess it's time to, it's about governance and the failure of governance. And I guess it's time for those of us who have been pushed through the system, and not just Baltimore, but all around the country, those of us who have been pushed through the system and improperly prepared for making meaningful contributions in our adult life, then we need to go back and sue all those chancellors and those city councilors who have allowed the system to deteriorate to the point that it is now, because it didn't get here in 5 years.
No.
I think you read a report about someone looked at what's happened over the past 5 years.
Right.
It's been 20, 25 years.
Yeah.
To get to this point where the schools are not prepared to teach the children because they're in such disrepair. Well, where was the chancellor of schools 15, 20 years ago and the school board that they weren't planning to build new schools to keep them up to par? I mean, it means they failed. But, this, it's my favorite song nowadays is we need to sue city council and we need to hold them responsible every term. Not just this current group. I'm not picking on anyone in particular, but all those men and women who have been there for the years gone by and in the years to come, we need to give them goals. They need to be built into their contracts that if they don't meet those goals, they don't get that money.
Hey, Clark, you know what you're talking about, sir? You know what? The same thing that's probably been discussed at your workplace as it has been for mine. Performance-based evaluations.
Performance-based pay, yes.
And performance-based pay, Clark.
That's it, brother. That is the phrase of the colloquial phrases of the putting it. The performance-based pay,
right?
For city council members, for chancellor or superintendent of their schools and education, whatever those titles are, for police commissioners and captains up there who run precincts and districts, and they fail. They allow their officers to create and live and work in environments where it's okay to abuse the citizenry. They allow their teachers and their principals to say it's okay to fail people of certain communities or certain income classes. And I'm not, like you said, it's not about black and white. It's really about income levels. And shame on them all, because many, if not a majority of some of those men and women who have made the greatest contributions to our cultures were came from low-income families.
There it is.
You know
there
what
it
I'm
is.
Saying?
I know. I hear you loud
brain
and clear.
Drain.
Yep.
But listen, I could go on for a while. You got a show to go. Keep up. Keep doing the do. Love you, brother.
Hey, love you too, Clark. Thank you so much for your love and your support. And you are absolutely right. And that's the type of leadership model that I think has often been neglected and overlooked, and in some cases disregarded, where we our leaders don't come from with silver spoons from their mouths. I've heard those stories. I've heard that story at the mayoral election. We heard that story for the congressional race. Leaders don't come with silver spoon in their mouths, but it's important that the people got to remind them of that, so that way they don't lose sight of those who have often been disenfranchised and forgotten. Let's go to Sabrina in Virginia. Sabrina, is this Sabrina or Sabrina?
It's Sabrina.
Ah, Sabrina. I knew this was you, Sabrina. All right, Sabrina, talk to me, man. What's your take on this?
How are you?
I'm good.
First of all, I want to tell you how much I really appreciate you sharing my post earlier today about my grandmother. And thank you and your entire staff. I so appreciate you for that.
I know your grandmother is missing Miss Bernice Cooper.
Yes.
Hopefully there is a little information, something that is going to help us to bring Miss Bernice home. Safe and sound, because you said she suffers from dementia. So our prayers and our hearts are with you on that, Sabrina.
Thank you so much. Thank you. But on the education note, my opinion on that is long and vast, but I know you have a show to do. Part of what I want to say is this. It is so important and imperative for us to be PTA members and volunteers at our children's school. And this is the reason why, because we already know we are starting from behind the curveball. Mm. They're not going to tell us anything. So if we are constantly in that space and in their spaces, we can see what's going on. They don't have to tell us anything because they're not going to tell us anyway.
Right.
But if I can see what's going on already, then that's okay. You don't have to tell me. I'm here to see it myself. And you can't tell me what I do not see. And what I see, I can advocate to fix. Because as one of your callers earlier said, just treat the root of the problem. Well, okay, a child can't learn in a cold. That's not realistic. A child can't learn in a room that's overheated. We have to make these conditions conducive to the learning process.
Yep.
And just like the young prince said, that's 11, making it fun. Okay, well, if I'm a parent volunteer and I'm at the school and I'm walking around and I'm sitting in on classes and things of that nature, and if I'm bored to death and I can see these children are bored to death, then okay, that's a problem. That's something I can advocate for. So that's why it's important for us to be a part of the PTA. That's why it's important for us to be parent volunteers. That's why it's important for us to be on the superintendent's parent board. Because we're there. We can see. You don't have to tell me because I can see it for myself. And as far as college students are concerned, that's why it's important for us to see it, because a lot of times they don't tell us where the scholarships are.
Yeah,
well, when my sons were going to college, they didn't have to tell me. I knew where they were.
Yeah.
I knew exactly where they were. A lot of times they're in some of the simplest places, like the Baltimore City School website. You would be surprised at how many scholarships are listed on that website, but parents don't go there to look.
Sabrina,
and they're not going to tell you that they're there.
Right, right. And I got to stop you right there. But, you know, the point that you're making, involvement, doing the research to get connected to the resources, that is absolutely right on point. And that's a part of it. That's a winnable victory, folks. Let me hear from Lindsay out of Baltimore. Lindsay, what's your take on this, ma'am?
Following up behind Sabrina, I think that we agree, but my main issue with everything that we've been talking about tonight is that, to me, it all ties down to engagement.
Yeah.
If you're poor, if you can't pay taxes on income taxes, you know, like for properties and for things to contribute to the schools and contribute to the community, you can still vote.
Right.
If you don't have certain things, you can still be engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the polls, even today in District 7, as diverse as that may be, many people didn't show up.
Yeah. Yeah, only about a little bit less than 30,000.
Right. The congressman is the person who can lobby for more money in certain areas, who can ask for different things.
Yep.
That's that person. But then we don't show up to the polls. Like they said before, we don't show up to a PTA meeting. Well, you know what I mean? It's letting other people take the reins for you as a person.
Yeah.
And for your children. Everybody has to be more involved. I think, you know, sometimes we get into this blame game or we point fingers or, you know, how could somebody do anything? But if we don't establish our own presence on every front, I was looking at the Iowa caucus. They go through great pains to include everybody in that count. And people showed up in satellite places all around the country to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because of the attack on black voting, if you watch the Iowa caucus, you're kind of watching like, oh, wow, like, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for other people to vote and for their voices to be heard and a lot of accommodation. And so it's 2020, you know, like we have information all around us, but it seems like we're sleeper than ever.
Right. Wow.
We're more asleep than ever.
Wow.
I mean, you can look up everything. You can see everything. And yet we still aren't showing up. Like, I just kind of get tired. We can sue this person or sue that person. But if the own parents aren't showing up to contribute.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying, I was watching that last night, like, wow, and these people are enthusiastic. They're showing up to vote. They're begging somebody to come to their voter pool.
You know what, Lindsay, I got to stop you right there. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that. You're absolutely right. There is so much more. I'm going to try to get one more call in. Let me hear from Ray out of Baltimore. Ray, what's your take on this?
My take is we as black people make all the excuses in the world, and we're the leading contributors to the failure of our children. We buy our babies in elementary school. Tell me when I'm wrong. $1,000 iPhones, and we have no learning apps on it. even in the counties, the Randallstown, the Woodlawns, I've gone to PTA meetings, three parents there. I'm going to tell the truth about it. Tell me when I'm making something up. My grandparents raised eight children, okay, and they died about 15 years ago. All eight of those children went to schools, no air conditioning, no heat, et cetera. By the way, Delaney High School ranked one of the top high schools in the country. They haven't had air conditioning for 20 years. And let me say this, Roger, you have children and I have children.
Right.
If when the air conditioning goes out for 5 days, guess what? Your children are going to go to school because the greatest teacher is the parent. Mm. And we don't want to talk about that because it's not a sexy conversation. But we are the leading contributors to the racism that is also a contributor. But guess what? We say we're godly people. I thought God trumped our racism. Mm. And there are many black children, including mine and many that I know, who succeeded against all odds, and they did not embrace the excuses and the parents. Let one of my children say they're not going to school because it's too hot or too cold. Mm. Okay. But they can. We allow them to play with these expensive phones. We're not monitoring what they're doing on the computer. And the studies show it. Our children are watching TV and on cell phones 7 hours a day. Asian children 1 hour a month. What teacher can control that? Mm. The teacher is in the home.
Mm.
And until we start manifesting that into our community, we're going to beg for programs. We're going to beg for white institutions that have always been harmful for us to save us. I'm not looking for them to save us. If I have a child, I'm the teacher, because teachers in Baltimore City do an outstanding job, but they can only teach the children that are prepared to learn, like the ones that you and your wife produce.
There it is. There it is. Ray, I love it. Thank you so much for checking in. Kimberly checked on my Facebook page and said, we have to think more positive of our schools. Yes, we need more big money, but seeing the 21st century schools built gives me hope. The tour of the school was phenomenal. We need more blacks to attain multimillionaire status and invest. You ain't never lie, Kimberly. You ain't never lie. Folks, we got to take another pause. When we come back, more of For the Culture for our special extended broadcast tonight. From the 7 to 8 o'clock hour, folks, we'll continue our conversations. I want to switch gears to talk about everything from the Super Bowl to one of our very own athletes, Baltimore's very own Gervonta Tank Davis, give you the update on that. And, of course, we're getting you prepared as the final few moments, at the final hour of the polls are being open for the special election for the next congressional Maryland 7th Congressional District. We'll talk about that. Stay riding with me. A whole lot is coming up in the final hour of For the Culture right here on WWE.